It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Rangers Today Baseball Podcast. From the bus leagues to the big leagues, the Rangers Today Baseball Podcast has got you covered. Here's Jeff and John.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Rangers Today Baseball Podcast. This is episode number 117, and today, Dr. Keith Meister, MD, is going to join us. He's the team physician and does all the UCL Tommy John surgeries for the Texas Rangers. Before we go anywhere and get anybody on here, though, we have got to talk about the big league team, who just took 3-4 in Detroit. They are 11-9 overall, leading the American League West. They are 5-5 in their last 10. You know, Leiter had his start yesterday. There were good things. Look, I didn't see it. I put it on Twitter that I didn't see it. I went back and watched all the highlights. From what I could tell, when he's making his pitches to the location he wants, he's all as advertised. Mm-hmm. But when he falls behind and doesn't, people can hit him. He is it's encouraging, and he also, let's be honest, he really only really gave up about 4 runs. But like I said, yeah, to somebody that threw a fit about Tavares and all of that, they wanted to throw Tavares under the bus, and I was like, okay, let's look at this. Tavares had the winning RBI yesterday. He went 2-for-4. I said he missed a fly ball that went over 400 feet that he misplayed.
And he should have caught the ball.
Sure.
All right. I mean, he
got twisted all around going back.
He should have caught it.
Yeah.
All right. All right. So Leiter, yeah, when his command was good, he was good. He missed too much. You know, he had 3 walks, but that doesn't really speak to the command issues. He was ahead in some counts, couldn't put away guys. They ended up getting hits or whatever. You know, he would just miss locations like the entire opposite side of the plate at times, but there was a lot of good. The stuff is there. I mean, the pitches play, the fastball plays when it's commanded, and that's it. That's for everybody. So, you know, you consider all the factors in an MLB debut, you know, all the emotion, everything that goes into it. He was probably pretty fired up. Maybe when the Rangers went up 4-0, he kind of took a deep breath and took his foot off the gas a little bit, maybe. You know, he talked about afterwards how he hadn't attacked like he had at AAA, where he had 25 strikeouts and only 3 walks. And look, you can't – that's really impressive in this day and age with the automated balls and strikes at AAA. That means that you're hitting your spots, you're getting ahead, and hitters are having to they chase.
Right.
Even with the ABS, or your stuff is so good in the strike zone that you're just not getting any hard contact, and you're getting a lot of swings and misses. So there's a lot of good there. There are some things that need to work on. He acknowledged that as much afterward. Don't know where his next appearance will be. It could be back in Round Rock. I mean, basically this was a spot start, but the Rangers also need a reliever.
So he might get options.
He could get option, but there aren't a lot of great options right now in Round Rock because of injuries. So, you know, if the Rangers can survive a couple days, you know, maybe Leiter's bullpen day is Sunday. Maybe he can give him an inning or two Sunday. But the fact of the matter is he's a Major League Baseball player now. He's the number 2 overall pick in the 2021 draft. He's probably the most hyped Rangers prospect since David Clyde, honestly. So for this to finally happened, it's good. And I say finally, is, you know, he's only got 2 professional season under his belt. I've always sided on the player side. You know, players will tell you when they're ready, and he's told the Rangers that he's ready.
Yep.
I think the Tigers and what he did yesterday kind of told him that he's needs a little more work, but he's going to get it. Yeah. He'll be in the majors at some point this year, whether it's in 2 days, whether it's next week at some point, or whether it's the next time a need arises for a starting pitcher.
Well, and one thing he did prove too, now let's be honest. Yeah, maybe the Tigers said he needed a little extra work. He did not do anything to say that the stuff's not there, that he can't be a big league pitcher. I mean, he there were some encouraging things that I saw.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, in the thing, in his start. So, I mean, look, he plays good. He may be the most hyped pitcher you're talking about since David Clyde, because I don't know, man. The hype that we've got all around Langford this year is some of the most that I've ever seen in a prospect.
Yeah, well, yeah, at the time with Leiter and when he was drafted, how bad the team was. And
well,
where
pitching
they were.
For sure.
Yeah. So anyway, so he you know, the Rangers didn't lose.
No.
their offense had a good day.
Right.
You know, Tavares had an interesting day with the fly ball.
Base running blunder.
It was a blunder, but it ended up working in the Rangers' favor, but right. It was a bad play that really could have cost them the game, honestly. And anyway, and then he had a big hit in the ninth. So up and down game for him, but he's had a rough road trip. He's really hit the ball well. I think you're starting to see Leody Tavares come find his rhythm here at the plate. He's had some bad luck, but
got the winning RBI
leading off the. He didn't get the winning RBI. He scored the winning run, the go-ahead run.
Well, he got the extra
run. He got the insurance RBI.
He got the insurance RBI. Okay. I watched highlights, guys. Remember, I'm having to try to remember from highlights.
The series started off with Michael Lorenzen.
Who was not horrible.
Making his debut. He made pitches when he had to. He walked a few too many guys, but he got three double plays that kind of wiped those things out, and that's kind of what he does. You know, he if you look at him historically, he doesn't give up a lot of home runs. Doesn't strike out a lot of guys. Usually doesn't walk a lot of guys. So he didn't have his spring training. And so I think maybe he's still trying to find the feel for some things mechanically. And, but hey, five scoreless innings, hard to complain about that. No matter how you get them, it's 5-0s and the Rangers ended up winning that game 1-0. Kirby Yates had a really good series. He had two saves and a win. Looks like he's now kind of firmly entrenched there as closer, though tonight in the opener in Atlanta, if there's a save opportunity, I'm guessing that goes to Robertson.
Yeah, he's not going to be available tonight,
Yeah, I don't think. Yates has gotten four outs the last two games, so I would think that Daniel Robertson would be the guy. God dang it, I called him Daniel. David Robertson. Do you remember Daniel Robertson? He played for the Rangers in 2014, maybe a little bit in 15. Yeah. He was about 5'5", and When he got called up, we were in Oakland. When he got called up is when the Rangers were going through all these injuries and everything was terrible, but it was still early in the season. And they called him up and nobody had heard of him.
Yeah.
No one had heard of him. And there's a reason for that. I mean, he's no longer in the majors. He's a nice enough guy. He was extremely cocky for
little man syndrome
for him. But he was nice guy, I guess a good story, that was kind of the year of good stories amid all the bad news with Profar and Moreland and Chu and of course Prince Fielder. And, I'm sure I'm leaving out a ton of injuries. There was Robertson and Wilder Rodriguez and some stories like that, that were kind of heartwarming and, longtime journeyman minor leaguers making their major league debut. But anyway, pretty much every time I type David Robertson, the first thing in my mind is Daniel. So I've got to get rid of that. And so, but anyway, David Robertson, is a very accomplished major league pitcher and has 175 career saves. He may get a chance tonight.
Did you see the stat where the Rangers bullpen, if they could take out the seventh inning for the season, their bullpen is, I mean, the whole staff is like fourth in all of baseball.
Oh, no, I didn't see
but
that.
But this, the seventh inning, last, they got it. Look, Leclerc made it close again yesterday, but he did get them out of the seventh inning with no runs. But like the seventh inning, they got like a 10.8 ERA. Everywhere else is good and in every other inning. In fact, let's be honest, the back of the bullpen has not done bad.
No.
We're, 14 games or not 18 games into it. They have not really been that horrible. Last year, we could see the writing on the wall. Leclerc has obviously struggled a couple times, but he's given him multiple innings, when he's come in the last couple of times. Still in, I know he's not closing, but he's still in some leverage situations to bringing him in with close games, which this is where he needs to be. I don't know. I'm never going to give up on Leclerc. I like him. He's a great guy. He faces it. And when his stuff's going, he's good. Now, going past now Lorenzen, we were back on Lorenzen we were talking about. He did not look like a dominant number one starter, but he gave him five scoreless innings.
Yeah,
and that's all you can.
He wasn't signed to be a number one starter.
Yeah, he's not a strikeout guy. He's so a ground ball guy.
He was signed to fill a need, and he's going to get a shot to fill it. So, Cody Bradford's hurt right now. Just a little back strain. He's supposed to be back in the 2 weeks. Josh Spores was supposed to be back, I think, Monday, but I don't think he's going to make it. He's just throwing. I don't think he's been off a mound yet.
Yeah.
So Brock Burke had surgery yesterday after he punched the door. It was a door, apparently. Whatever it was that he punched, it broke his right hand, and so he had surgery on that, and he's on the 60-day IL.
Which opened up the spot for Leiter.
That opened the spot for Leiter. So a lot of moving parts so far this season. I mean, the Rangers have had six guys make their MLB debuts this season, or maybe it's just five.
Let's look at it. What do we got?
It's got Leiter. It's six. It's you start with Langford.
Right.
Foscue.
Wenzel.
Wynn.
Yep.
Leiter.
Okay.
So I think, and then
there's one more because that's five.
There is one more, and I'm going to give it to you as soon as I fight off the sneeze.
Okay.
Gosh darn it.
Look at the light. Look at the light. That'll make you sneeze.
Anyway, it's a lot.
Yes,
it's a big number, and
which is what you need for championship teams. You got to have some guys.
But it's good. Yeah, it's a good thing that the Rangers have this depth and are able to lean on it. And again, you know, you look and it's like, hey, you know, you're gonna need guys.
Right.
Every team is gonna need guys. And you hope that you have good guys down in the minor leagues. And the Rangers, they do. I know Wenzel's still looking for his first hit, but he's a good defensive player.
He's actually had good at-bats.
He's put together some really good at-bats.
Yeah.
And then, Foscue, he's on the 60-day now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
That oblique, he must have.
Yeah, apparently it's Bruce Bochy said it's worse than Nathaniel Lowe's. And we know Lowe has been out. Really, he got hurt on March the 7th, and today's the 19th. So, and he's still probably a week away. So,
He's in Triple A now.
That's not insignificant injury. If you're going to miss 2 months because of a lat, that's a big one. Oh, Austin Pruitt's the other guy who's come up, but it was not his major league debut.
Right. Yeah. So
I mean, he's been around since 2017. I didn't realize he'd been around that long. So. He's an interesting story about him. He got optioned 9 times by the Rays 1 year. And so that's why there's now that rule where it's max of 5. And on the 5th one, you have to be DFA'd.
Okay. All right.
Anyway.
So he was on the bus back and forth from Durham to Tampa Bay a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, and let me say this, when you're a championship team and you're in the position you are right now, players have to step up. Josh Young has gone down with injury, and I had to take your hat off to everybody. I mean, Josh Smith has been amazing.
Very, very good. Yeah, you know, he had the big hit Wednesday in the win before the rain came. You know, he's just getting in there, and he's playing really good defense. Obviously, he's never going to hit for a ton of power.
No,
but. He'll get on base. He'll take walks. He gets hit by pitches.
He dropped some F-bombs yesterday.
Yeah, that was pretty good. but he's proven to be a pretty handy guy. And, you know, there was some thought that I definitely thought it, that there was a chance that Josh Young wouldn't make the opening day roster. The Rangers had claimed Jose Barrero.
Or Josh Smith wouldn't make
Josh
the opening.
Josh Smith. Yes. Josh Young was always going to make it. Yes. Well, unless he was hurt.
Yes, that's true.
But okay. Josh Smith, they had claimed Barrero, and he's out of options. And so there was a, you know, like if they really want to preserve this guy and make sure they don't lose him, then he would go, you know, he would stay. And Smith, who has the options, would be the tough luck guy. But Barrero made it through the waivers and really didn't show a lot in spring training. And I don't think he's playing right now. I think he's in extended spring training. So anyway, it's worked out pretty well for,
Did he clear waivers?
Yeah, yeah, he cleared.
That's right.
It's worked out pretty well for, the Rangers.
So they've got this guy who was a potential, he was a top prospect.
Yeah.
And I mean, highly ranked prospect. And right. Man, if you can find something and get, maybe that's where to keep him there right now and just let him get his head right and get everything going.
Yeah, no, he was a Reds top prospect, and the Reds are kind of really good farm system.
Yeah,
and their young talent is on display now every night. They'll be here next weekend. And but anyway,
Atlanta series coming up.
Yeah, that'll be a good test to where the Rangers are. They're going to have Heaney, Evaldi, Lorenzen. The Sunday night game is on national TV. I think tonight is Apple TV, if I'm not mistaken. But whatever. It'll be a good little test, and like to see how the Braves are beat up too. So
yeah,
but they're playing real well.
They're good.
They have so much talent.
That's the team that's going to give. Everybody seems to think the Dodgers are the team to beat in the National League, but I'm telling you, don't sleep on the Braves. They're good.
Yeah.
Good Lord, they're good. And so it's great.
But I mean the Spencer Strider injury.
Oh gosh,
that's a blow. But Spencer Strider, his surgery was performed by Keith Meister. So
yeah.
The Rangers are in an all right spot. They're still trying to feel things out.
They've got to survive this till they get some of these guys back.
They're going to get low back. I'm thinking here on this homestand coming up.
Okay.
Max Scherzer will be back early to mid May. So that's going to help. That's just going to be a shot of confidence. Spores will be back at some point. So, if they can survive now, keep their head above water, they're above 500, they're in first place. They've never been out of first place.
No, ever. They've been tied at one point. They've been tied,
I think, with the Angels at one point. But you look at the rest of the division, everybody else is under 500. And the Astros
are in the toilet.
They're like 6-13 or 6-14. So
they are
they're getting Justin Verlander back.
They're 8-12.
Are they?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well. Learn something new every day.
Yep.
I thought they were a little worse than that. But whatever. They're not good right now. And
No, they're 6-14. I was looking at the wrong thing. You're right. They're 6-14. 5 games back of the Rangers. Right now. I mean, look, there's a lot of grumblings and stuff happening down in Houston. While we're thinking about it, before we get we've got to get out of here, and
we'll get Keith on here and go from there. But yeah, a couple of things before we do that. One,
let's talk about Elvis.
A couple of things are going on at rangerstoday.com, and T.R. Sullivan, a big baseball historian, loves to read baseball books. One of his favorite books is The Boys of Summer by Roger Kahn, and wrote about the Brooklyn Dodgers more than 50 years ago.
Still a great book.
TR as it wants to do The Boys of Arlington, and he started yesterday at rangerstoday.com with Elvis Andrus. It's pretty interesting. TR had Elvis every year that I was on the beat with TR, and I didn't realize that Elvis had made this impact. Looking forward to seeing all of these that he cranks out. He's retired. He can write whenever he wants, whatever he wants. But he seems pretty motivated by this one. And so we'll see what happens. And over 32 years, he's come across a lot of guys. And so we'll see. But if you want, it's only at rangerstoday.com, which is $5.99 a month or $60 for the year. If you're watching this podcast and you want to get a subscription, I will give you an annual subscription for $48. All you have to do is email me, Jeff@rangerstoday.com. I'll send you a QR code, and everything will work out just beautifully. So we had a couple guys do it last week after announcing this, and I don't think they're complaining at all. So just hop onto the website, and you won't regret it. It's $4 a month. If you get the $48 deal, it's $5 a month if you're feeling generous and don't. Either way, it's $5 as a cup of coffee at Starbucks. Just ditch the coffee one day a month, and you're good.
Listen, there's another thing I want to kick around too with TR too.
Okay.
And you guys, we want your feedback if this is something look, the memoirs that he is writing is fantastic. It goes all the way back to when Rangers Today started. He started writing his memoirs. For anybody that's an old school Texas Ranger fan, if you're not reading these memoirs, it's crazy. Jeff's been on the beat since 2008. TR's been on since, I think, 89 was when TR first came on, somewhere back in there.
Yeah.
He's been there 32 years before he retired. He's got great stories, especially about when the Rangers came here. We're thinking about doing a thing with TR, aside from this show itself, just one with TR, maybe get some Q&A with him, but come in, talk about his memoirs and all his stories. I mean, they're all amazing. If you've never seen TR or talked to TR, he's a storyteller. And it's, you know, we used to do it in the press box. You could just listen to him. He could bring up anything. He's like you beat writer brains are crazy how y'all can just bring anything out of it. But TR says, hey, if you need me, we can do it. So you guys, what do you think about that idea? I think that's something we want to try to do maybe a couple times a month, just get him on and
just, let's spread it out. We don't want to run out of inventory. So
that's true. But maybe once a month.
Maybe we do a couple to start, and because he's written some that are fun and just kind of like countdown lists and things like that. But they're like the very first one we did, but he did one that was about the origin of the team, and it was three or four parts, and there's just a lot to unpack in that.
Oh my gosh. I'm a guy that is – I'm 74, my first year to ever go to a game. I did not know all the backstory about trying to get the Rangers here. This thing, guys, I'm saving it. I'm not even going to give you a hint. I've always just thought Bob Short came to Tom Vandegrift, and they just brought the Rangers down here that were the Senators. Man, there were other teams involved. There were almost other teams that came here.
Sure.
I mean, there is some backstory that I didn't know about, and we'll get TR and talk about that. That'll be the first one. That's just – it's a great story. One that someone like me who's known this team and followed this team since almost its inception, I learned a lot from that.
Yeah. Oh, I learned a lot, too.
I learned a lot from that I did not know. There was a Senator involved. There was the Astros were the – again, just it'll heat the rivalry up at why the Astros tried to keep the Rangers out of Texas. I mean,
it sounds scandalous.
Oh, it was very scandalous. You don't trust your government now. Hey, it was the same thing back then, apparently. Anyway, we'll get that on. But right now, guys, we're going to get out of here. We got to bring our guest on. Coming up next, we got Dr. Keith Meister, brought to you by the Round Rock Express.
Yes.
The guest spot is brought to you by the Round Rock Express. Jeff, what's going on with Round Rock?
Well, Round Rock is right now, they're on the road, although Sugar Land's not much of a trip. They're back at Dell Diamond starting next week on Tuesday, April the 23rd. They have $2 Taco Tuesday, a staple, on the 24th. $1 Hot Dogs, also a staple, on the 25th. Thirsty Thursday, you got it, a staple. 26th, weekends are always big at Dell Diamond. Marvel's Defender of the Diamond Night on Friday the 26th. The Express Prom on the 27th, and then Princess Day on the 28th. Go see the Round Rock Express, the Rangers AAA affiliate, play the Salt Lake Bees, the Angels affiliate. Go to MILB.com/round-rock for more information.
Guys, and joining us right now is the team physician for the world champion Texas Rangers, and also the owner of TMI Sports Medicine. It's Dr. Keith Meister. Dr. Meister, I can't tell you how awesome it is to have you on here. Thanks for joining us.
Well, I appreciate the invite and the opportunity.
Hey, Keith. What did you do with your ring?
It's actually, I'm up visiting family, as I told you, in New York now, and everybody wanted to see it, so I brought it with me. So, far from me.
Did it make the metal detector go off? I mean, did they stop it at the airport and check it out, or what?
I had to check my bag to make sure that didn't leave the convention going through security, but it was still there.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. I mean, I know you've been with the Rangers for a while, and I remember talking to you in 2011, and we were there thinking this was it. And so perseverance for a lot of guys, and you're one of them. So good for you.
It was a heartbreak, but you know, it all paid off.
It sure did. Yes. So we wanted to have you on because your name's been in the news, and obviously I've known you for a number of years, and you even helped me identify a back problem once upon a time, but with the elbow injuries that are popping up around the game and everything, I wrote a story on my website about it, and bouncing some ideas off some pitchers and just reading what's out there and hearing what some guys have had to say. And it sounds like it's a bunch of things, not just the pitch clock, as the union and the MLB kind of went back and forth on. So as one of the leading orthopedists, elbow guys in the country, what are you thinking here?
No, I think you're right. To be, you know, somewhat diplomatic about it, I think it's multifactorial. There's no question that there are a lot of issues that we can point to that do probably take some credit for the problem that we're having. I think there's one overwhelming problem, but, you know, as far as the pitch clock goes, because that's the question I get asked an awful lot. I probably get asked about the pitch clock the most. And I do my own informal survey with players that come in, and it's interesting to hear, you know, different generations of pitchers have a different take on it. You know, to be fair, in general, the younger players don't seem to draw issue with it at all. And I think there's probably a couple reasons for that. I think number one, it's now what they've gotten used to. And I think that's important. It's kind of the environment that they're growing up in as pitchers. And then the second thing is they're young. You know, they're very youthful. Their ability to recover and bounce back and endure pitch to pitch. And the resiliency, no question, is greater when you're younger. So that being said, it doesn't obviously explain the rash of shoulder elbow injuries that we're having in these young throwers. The older pitchers, on the other hand, very interestingly, they do have a problem with it. They do say that maybe not every time, and you can sit there and you can look at Jake DeGrom's time between pitches on average during a start, you know, when he was out there pitching, and it probably sits somewhere around where the pitch clock sits or less, or averages mm-hmm. less. But, you know, there are times when long at bat, 10 pitch at bat, long inning, so forth, that guys just want the ability to be able to step back off the mound and take a blow. So I think the older pitchers feel that much more than the younger pitchers do. And they bring up the very valid point that hitters during an at bat are allowed to take, you know, one timeout, so to speak, within the at bat. But yet pitchers are not.
Yeah.
Feel like everything is stacked against them and everything is done in favor of the hitters. So the pitch clock, you know, I think is maybe a factor, but I don't think it's an overwhelming factor. But I think that's just something that we need to continue to explore as an industry, because, you know, clearly it's been favorable in terms of length of games and managing sure. time that people have to sit and watch a game. And I think the longer the game, you know, as much as we all love the game, I think we all like to see shorter games. So that's
yeah. In game three of the ALDS, Nathaniel Lowe had the very famous at bat there at the start of the Rangers rally where it was like a 15 pitch at bat. Mm-hmm. And the players in the Rangers dugouts could tell that the pitcher was taking huge breaths, to your point about not being able to rest. And then the Rangers went in and scored five or six runs that inning. I mean, and you know, somebody pointed out last year, there was a situation where Martin Perez had to cover first on back-to-back plays. And, yeah. you know, just little things like that with the pitch clock might tax the body, might tax the lungs a little bit more in some cases, but.
Question. Yeah. I mean, if you're looking, you know, in those instances, those episodes, I mean, they clearly could put a pitcher at risk for a higher risk for injury. And there should be probably some accommodation made for that. I don't think there's any question. We can find maybe a better balance and still be able to shave time off games and make the game rhythm better. But I think there has to be some accommodation made for circumstances like that.
Yeah. Does MLB, with you being one of the, especially one of the lead UCL guys, do they talk to you at all about anything like this, where you're actually saying maybe give the pitchers a blow where they can take a timeout too? Have they ever come to you, or have y'all had discussions with MLB?
We have. It started several months ago. I was named to a task force by Major League Baseball on an advisory committee for injuries. That being said, there's been very little discussion and very little movement over the last several months. I just had actually another conversation with John D'Angelo in the MLB front offices, and he's part of this and part of this fact finding and digging into this. And there's no question John has a very high level of concern and and love for the game. And he's digging. It's a very, very difficult circumstance situation, because there are a lot of factors that are pushing and pulling on all of this. The pitch clock is one of the, as I say, smaller issues. I think that really, when we really want to point to the two primary factors that we know without question are causing a huge spike in injury, number one is velocity. Absolutely. Pitch velocity. You can't even begin to compare what we were looking at even 5 to 7 years ago with what we are seeing today with respect to velocity. I mean, the numbers are there. Average fastball velocity in 2002 was 88.5 miles an hour. It's now almost 95.
Wow.
It's not even, it's a different world, a different era that we're living in. And that's for healthy, and that's for unhealthy pitchers, meaning pitchers coming off surgery and reconstructions. Because we used to say, I mean, I've been doing this 30 years now, and I used to feel like, okay, you get your Tommy John, you're good for your set for your career. And Colby Lewis, he had a TJ by Dr. Frank Jobe when he was 17 years old, and didn't need another elbow operation until he was 35. And so I think that was more the norm rather than the exception if your career ever lasted that long. Yeah. And then, okay, you're going to last 10 to 12 years. Then it was like, okay, maybe we'll get 7, 8, 9 years, And now, quite frankly, it's 3 to 5 years. It doesn't surprise me in the least when a guy re-tears at that juncture. I mean, we're seeing it over and over again. Look at the Dodgers. I mean, they've been absolutely hammered by it. And again, right. Surgery is done by very good, very competent surgeons. And so I think that, velocity is absolutely a major factor. The National Perfect Game in 2013, that means the best high school players in the country, I think there were 5 kids that threw over 94 miles an hour. Last year, there were 57 kids that threw over. So, I mean, the changes in the metrics have just changed so dramatically that the game, and certainly from a health standpoint, has not been able to keep up with it. And that's just the velocity. Yeah. The other piece of this is what I call the designer pitches, the sweeping slider and what I call a power changeup. And ultimately, I think that, and I've said this before, I think the nomenclature for pitches is very antiquated. And we have all this technology and we have all this information, and we can look at these pitches in so many different ways that I think that we need to discuss more. For me, it's more about extremes of movement. And particularly, I personally think the most high-risk pitches are the pitches that create the most horizontal ball movement. And so that's a sweeping slider and that's a power changeup. There's so many different types of changeups now. When somebody says they throw a changeup, it's like, well, wait a minute, what do you mean by that? And actually, every pitcher that comes in my office, one of the first things I do is I flip them a baseball. And I say, show me what pitches you throw and show me how you hold that baseball. And then I photograph all their pitch grips. So I've got this huge library of very, very level throwers and their pitch grips. And the presentation is across the board. Now, I mean, a changeup, Jeff, you and I growing up, changeup was, typical circle change, 3 fingers on. Ball, stay behind the baseball. It was not a movement pitch. It was a deception pitch. It was a pitch.
Change speed.
That's it. Change in speed. It's not that anymore. There's the split change, right? Yamamoto pitch, which is a pitch with a tremendous amount of down vertical movement. There's what I call the power changeup, which is really a screwball with a changeup grip now, where guys are dramatically and forcefully turning over the ball into what we call a pronated position and trying to create arm side run. And it does that in an incredibly efficient way, but it also does that with creating a huge amount of stress on the medial elbow, on the inner side of the elbow. And so we're seeing a lot of guys that have either had Tommy Johns or haven't had them yet with very, very significant repeated tear patterns meaning I can go ahead and I can look at an MRI scan, and to such a great extent now, I can almost predict the pattern and the way they're throwing a baseball because wow. of the pattern of injury. Yeah, it's that, you know, it's that demonstrative now. And then with a sweeping slider, probably much worse even, because you're basically what you're telling a pitcher is grip the ball with whatever sweeper grip that you choose, squeeze the ball as hard as you can, and throw it as hard as you can, and supinate your forearm as far as you, hard as you can at the same time. So if anybody grabs a baseball and you put your arm in kind of a layback position there, you know, your arm is in that layback position, squeezing the baseball really hard, and then you're squeezing, and at the point of release, all of a sudden you get this what we call huge eccentric load on the inner side of the elbow, meaning this contracted muscle gets stretched against the contraction at a very, very high rate, at a very forceful rate, so everything gets ripped off the medial side or the inner side of the elbow. And we see this over and over and over again now. It's so predictable, and it's so repeated, and so it's not sustainable, as we all see, and we're all seeing. It's just not a sustainable formula. And talking to the front office people, you know, the rhetoric that you get, there's no logic to it, because when you're looking at baseball, you have to think about the way to endure best 162 game season. That means for a starting pitcher, you want to see at least 30 plus starts. And if you look statistically now, what's happening in baseball last year, it was just over, you know, a pitcher per team actually started a game 30 times. So that's crazy.
Right.
Again, Jeff, I always say, I mean, I could predict. I'm here in New York and, you know, a few minutes from Shea Stadium, Yankee Stadium, but, you know, it was Seaver, Kuzman, Matlock. I mean, I could predict that. I could pick a ticket, a date on the schedule and say, okay, Tom Seaver's pitching this day and I'm going to get to go see him pitch because right. I know. Up, you know, in this rotation at this point in time. Forget it now. It's impossible. And that's bad for the fan, right? As much as it is for, forget about the health aspects and why this is occurring and the implications of health on this. But it's for the fan who wants to gravitate to certain players and latch onto these players and grow up idolizing these players and loving the game because of these players. I think that's a real black eye on the game itself. So,
yeah, you know, one thing you've always told me, Keith, is you can't put a V10 in a Volkswagen. And that seems like to your velocity, your point on velocity. I mean, the elbow's not built to withstand what is happening in the game.
No, and there are really two ways to develop a pitcher, and this is what is problematic, because it's unfortunately the healthier way is not the more reinforced way, or it's certainly not the way that baseball is leaning, right? You can either, you know, and I've talked to front office people, and this actually absolutely I think is very disturbing, but they say, well, we sit there and we tell these 18, 19-year-olds, you have two options. We can either teach you how to pitch, you know, this particular way, meaning throw off your fastball, learn to throw strikes, control the zone, change speeds, a la Kyle Hendricks, who's done this for years, a la Dane Dunning, right?
Cody. Sure.
Who are doing that in our rotation now. So it's an achievable way to do this, that you can be very successful doing it. But that takes time and that takes patience. And they say, well, you'll maybe only get to AA, AAA if we do that. Or we can show you these two magnificent pitches and you can be in the big leagues in 2 years. Well, what do you think this 18 or 19-year-old or 20-year-old is going to do?
Absolutely.
Right. Going to the big leagues. Yeah. So, you know, and I've had these arguments with other front office people. They say statistically we can look at these pitches and we can say, well, you know, you throw this fastball at this velocity and the OPS against that pitch is going to be 220. You throw this pitch with this velocity and this spin and the OPS against that pitch is going to be 180, 190. And I say, well, that's great. You can take statistics to bolster any argument if you put it in the right circumstance. And the right circumstance is that's an instant in time. Now, how does that play out over 162 games and 30-plus starts or 70 appearances for a guy coming out of the pen? Well, it doesn't play very well. And I've said many times before, if a guy has a 0.8 whip in the last 2 months, what value is that to the organization? I'd rather have a guy with a 1.1, 1.2 whip maybe, a little less war, but he's there the entire 162.
Sure. Because
the team that's healthy, right? The team that's healthy in the postseason is going to win.
Yeah.
Again,
let me ask you this now. I've heard some of them talk, some of the big league pitchers that are talking out there are talking about the tack and the sticky on the ball. If that, you know, baseball outlawed that a couple years ago. Yeah, the grip. Do you think that also contributes?
I actually, my sense now is it does. And the first guy that I really had some deeper conversations about this with was Tyler Glasnow. You know, around the time he got hurt, we did his surgery, and he was, you know, he's obviously a very, very talented guy. He's also a very bright guy. And, you know, he brought up the issue. And baseball's counter argument to that has been, well, the spin rates haven't changed. Well, the spin rates haven't changed because the pitchers have adapted, and they've adapted in such a way they just squeeze the ball that much harder. So right. It's just an additive negative effect here. So, they have been able to keep the ball spinning, but they now have to squeeze it that much harder. What the hitters, interestingly, will tell you is they're much more fearful when they step in the batter's
box. Absolutely. Absolutely.
They don't know where the ball's going now.
Exactly.
Every once in a while, right, that ball slips out, and then it's, you know, it's plunked to the ribs or at the head or whatnot.
Or Josh Young's wrist. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you know, again, that's the counter argument, but that's a specious argument, I feel.
Yeah. I'm not going to talk to a doctor about doctor stuff, but if your forearm is sore, something else has got to take the brunt. So it could lead flexor to a tight forearm might lead to a shoulder injury. Is that accurate to say?
You compensate.
Absolutely. Well, and it's all part of what we call the kinetic chain. So, you know, it becomes what's the weak link in the chain. And it's impossible to take that kind of grip on a baseball and only isolate the contraction within the forearm muscles, the entire upper extremity, the lat, the teres, the subscap in the shoulder, they all get wound this tight. And so we're seeing a huge spike in lat teres, teres major teres, subscap. Yeah. I mean, these are muscles that, right? I mean, Jeff, you've been doing this a long time. You probably never heard of 10 years ago.
Exactly. Other than
when you were sitting there doing a lat pull down or something, but in baseball, what does that all mean, right? I mean, what's that all about? But now it's, you know, it's every day. It's every day. And that's been, to your point, you know, well taken. That's led to, again, another significant further spike in these injuries. And they're not benign.
The first time I heard teres major was Jurickson Profar. Mm. First time I heard subscap was Derek Holland.
Yeah.
And the shoulder, it seems like a lot comes together here, but there's all the stuff in the back of the shoulder. What's in the elbow? I mean, there's the flexor tendon below the elbow, but is it just the UCL? What?
That's pretty much it. I mean, those are, you know, they kind of each do. I mean, the bony anatomy of the elbow helps to stabilize the elbow. But, you know, with respect to the soft tissues, it's your flexor mass and your ligament and the seatbelt and the suspenders, I always say. And they each do a 50-50 job of holding up the pants, you know? And so when one goes, one gets fatigued, well, the other is naturally gonna blow.
Yeah.
Especially at those velocities and those spin rates.
Oh, man. Yeah.
That's interesting. I watched the little video on his website. I went because I was trying to get some bio and look at your stuff at the TMI website, which is awesome. He shows little videos of every surgery they do. That was interesting, even for someone dumb like me, watching the elbow and kind of explaining where the UCL was and how you do it. It's pretty interesting, the inner workings. Of course, I never threw a baseball hard, so I didn't have to worry about it.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, one of the things, I mean, I'm extremely compulsive. And so one of the things I do is I photograph every surgery I do, every open surgery I do. So I got close to 2,000 elbow ligaments that we've done, and I've got this incredible library of all these photographs. And that's really helped us to better understand how well we're doing. I mean, if somebody doesn't do well, we're able to go back and say, technically speaking, is there something else we could have done differently or should have done differently? And I think that's have helped to evolve the procedure to not necessarily keep up with what's going on in baseball today, but to maybe at least move the needle a little bit.
We had Avery Weems on our show a couple weeks ago, and he talked about his ordeal, and it kind of unique that he'd had the injury before the one when you finally operated. He said that the UCL was fine, pulled off the bone, and you put in another ligament from somewhere else in his body, and also your brace. Mm-hmm. Talk about the brace procedure and how it works instead of just a ligament replacement, or do you do them all? How does it work?
Yeah, I mean, the brace has been around for a long time, but it was used initially in other parts of the body and then got adapted for the elbow. And I personally started using it and changed the technique from what was at least initially explained in 2014. So essentially, I think the biggest misconception is that, you know, a Tommy John procedure is a ligament transplant procedure. It's not. It's a reinforcement procedure. And for people that don't know, we're actually in the 50th anniversary year of the TJ. September will be Tommy John's 50th anniversary, which is kind of cool. And what's amazing to me as an aside is he is not in the Hall of Fame.
Right. I was going to ask you about that.
That's insane. I think that's incredible that this guy who won as many games, you know, several 20 game seasons and longevity that he had and took the chance that he did. Now, you know, is not in the Hall of Fame is to me just such a, just a lack of recognition of baseball history and you know, a historical moment. It's just, to me, I don't understand it because, you know, there's only one pitcher in the Hall of Fame that's had a Tommy John.
Tick tock.
Yeah.
Lay it on me.
John Smoltz.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I forgot. Did you do his?
No. Dr. Andrews did John Smoltz, you know, years ago. And that's, you know, it's interesting because John in his Hall of Fame acceptance speech said, you know, he'll probably be the only person, you know, that is ever inducted into the Hall of Fame because, you know, depending upon what the parameters become, you think about how disrupted pitchers' careers now. Now, I think obviously Verlander will be the second. He'll probably be the second. Hopefully Tommy John's the second because he But we'll see. Maybe somebody there in Cooperstown will recognize just ultimately the impactfulness of what he's added to the game, and he'll get his own room. You know,
your point is so right because he really took a chance. He was like a guinea pig.
He was.
His doctor came to him and said, "Hey, we got this idea," and he said, "Let's do it. I want to still play."
Yeah. I'll tell you a funny story. Dr. Job, you know, I mean, when he was alive, I mean, rest in peace, it was a brilliant man and brilliant surgeon. You know, he said, if I was smarter, I would have realized and would have done this in Sandy Koufax. Because Sandy's ligament went. And, you know, at the time, obviously, it was several years before Dr. Job had adapted this procedure. And I'll tell you another funny story. The second Tommy John ever. Brent Strom, the pitching coach for the Diamondbacks.
Okay.
I tell Stromy this all the time. I said, Stromy, just think about it. What would have happened if you were the first? What would we be calling the procedure?
Brent Strom doesn't roll off the tongue, you know.
No,
the BS procedure doesn't.
There you go. I like it.
That's great.
Oh, man. Back to the brace though.
Yes.
I thought it was initially like only position players were getting the brace.
Yeah.
What made pitchers confident enough in the procedure?
Well, here's you know, again, here's what it is. I mean, as I told you, TJ is a tendon reinforcement procedure, and obviously for many years it's done very well, and it's still a good operation to do today. The problem is on the elite side. Is there something that we can do better? And so we started reinforcing and repairing the ligaments with this brace, which kind of looks like a glorified shoelace. back in about 14 for me anyway. You know, other folks maybe a year or prior to that. But I've got now probably 60 pro guys with these braces in the elbows, and pitchers and position players and, you know, upper levels, lower levels alike. And I think that, I think there's still, you know, some degree of trepidation of just putting in a brace, because you don't want to reinforce bad tissue alone. Mm-hmm. So you expect that this device is going to account for tissue that's not necessarily healthy. So you want to put back hopefully healthy tissue with a clean tear, and you can maybe just brace it. We put one of these in Trevor Story last year, and he was back about 6 months in the game. Obviously, Brock Purdy's the big one, right. But backs are very different than baseball.
Yeah.
Then in 2018, because of partly my concern about, there are certain types of injuries to the ligament that are much higher risk, that we knew were not going to do as well with a standard procedure, and that didn't necessarily fit the mold for a brace. So I started doing what we call a hybrid reconstruction, where we put a brace in with a tendon graft. And so I essentially married the best components of the two procedures. And the first one I did was Kyle Cody. He had an odd circumstance, and I went to Kyle and I said, "Kyle, I've been thinking about this for a while. You know, you've got a difficult situation with your elbow. You know, this is what I'd like to try. Are you okay with it?" And he said, you know, Kyle's a bright guy, and he thought about it. He said, yep, makes sense. Go ahead. I trust you. And that was the first. So since then, I've done probably 350, 370. I don't know where my numbers are now. And every elite level thrower, actually every pitcher that I need to do a reconstruction on. And the qualifications for that are, it's obviously a torn ligament, but also the tissue quality, we don't have confidence in that's going to hold up if we just put a brace in. So we add tissue. And so it's a tendon plus a brace procedure. And I mean, the numbers are quite large now. I mean, this is what we put in Glasnow and Maeda and, you know, obviously Alcantara. I mean, quite a number of elite guys have this hybrid reconstruction now. And so that's on the primary side. And then, you know, on the revision side, where numbers, meaning second Tommy John or third Tommy John procedures, you know, the numbers and the results and the outcomes are just notoriously not very good. So what we did was, again, started doing this hybrid reconstruction procedure in the revisions. And rather than 55-60%, we're, you know, getting significantly better numbers. Kirby Yates is a great example. He was a second TJ, Cole Reagan's second hybrid reconstruction. So I think there's something to it. I think we're moving the needle. I mean, there's no perfect answer, because these guys, you know, look, I mean, at some point, all these guys will break again. They play long enough. Hopefully those careers go long enough and we can look back and say, wow, you got 10 years out of this one. Hopefully let's get 10 out of the next one. And then even on the revision side, the second Tommy John side, you know, there's a technique that we've come up with that we actually just repair the grafts that are torn rather than have to go back and do a completely new second Tommy John. Okay. And that's what we're doing in quite a few. And we've got some pretty good numbers, 40 to 45 of these now. And probably 80% of those are pro elbows. So we've got a good understanding of the level of functionality of the procedure. So as I said, there's no perfect. I mean, these guys have the ability to ruin anything that we do, but you know, I think we've moved the needle a little bit. I think that we're a little bit better, and certainly I'm optimistic, cautiously so, and hopeful that at least we'll get little longer period of time and better results. But look, I mean, the game, that still doesn't make up for everything that's changed in the game.
Yeah. And, yeah, you know, it seems like you and Dr. Ella Trotch in LA are the two guys. Is the brace making that big of a difference for you personally, as far as your workload or I mean, you have a lot of notches on your belt. It seems like it's you or the other. It doesn't it doesn't seem like there's anybody else doing these.
Yeah, he and I are very, very, very good friends, actually. And, you know, in most of these cases, go back and forth between the two of us. And, you know, I feel very fortunate to have him as a friend and a colleague. And I know he feels the same way. And because this is, you know, this is not a one-man job. I mean, it's obviously it's high stakes. It's, you know, it's stressful. And it's nice to be able to pick up the phone and call somebody that you trust and that you have confidence in as a colleague and a friend that we can get honest advice from each other and lean on each other when things are hairy.
That's good.
Let's ask you something real quick. Now, you do the surgeries, you're into this, you're a physician and all that. Now, you love sports. Were you an athlete? Did you play any sports growing up?
Yeah, I played soccer and baseball, and I actually, it was interesting. I could have gone to either Duke or Brown to play soccer, and at the time that I was trying to figure out the path that I was going to take or how I was going to take it, there were a number of schools that had these accelerated medical school programs, and so instead I ended up heading to Boston, and Boston University had a combined 6-year BAMD degree program. So essentially you went through undergrad in 2 years and then on to medical school. And I felt like I knew what I wanted to do at that point, although I didn't. Who knows how things are going to turn out at that age. I got very lucky and very fortunate. I met some great people along the way, and they helped to guide me. But yes, I mean, that was kind of my direction. And so it's worked out. Obviously I've been very, very fortunate.
You had a lot of hockey experience, a lot of hockey background, as you know, Team USA or US and the Stars, of course.
You know, I grew up in New York, just a few minutes from the New York Rangers training facility here, and then being in Boston at Boston University was one of the top college hockey programs in the country. So, while I was in training, I covered a lot of college hockey games. And then in 1992, when I was in Birmingham, Alabama, Dr. Andrews obviously was there, but also Dr. Bill Clancy, who I developed a very good relationship with. And Dr. Clancy was the medical director for USA Hockey. And it was kind of a fortuitous set of circumstances. It was end of November. Actually, it was early December. And I was sitting in the lounge with Dr. Clancy, you know, between cases, and he gets a phone call, and the doctor that was supposed to cover the World Junior Championships, which is the U-20 teams, dropped out. And Clancy and I had a really good relationship, and I heard him talking, and I turned to him. I said, "Bill, send me." And he looked at me, and he laughed. I said, "Yeah, send me, man. I can do this." And he said, "Okay." And so I stepped right in, and I covered every World Junior Championship from there through like 1999. And I these are all the kids, the first rounders and the draft. And so I you travel with them for two and a half weeks, close to 3 weeks, at a time. And it was a time in their lives where hockey, I think, was probably more fun for so many of them. It was before it became a business for so many of them, and their were there and usually traveling with them. So you got to be very, very close to the guys. And I wasn't that much older than them. So, so it was kind of a cool set of circumstances and relationships that I developed in the hockey world. And then when I moved to Texas, I stopped doing that in 99. And I just had too much else on my plate. And then when I moved to Texas in 04, I took over the Stars in 05, and I covered them for several seasons. And all these kids that I've known since they were, 17, 16, 17, 18, 19, were now in the NHL. So it was fun to see them blossom as they did as athletes and players and people.
No, one thing I forgot to ask you about when we were talking about the medical stuff, there are a lot of oblique injuries.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Pitchers and hitters alike.
Yeah.
Look.
What's up with that?
Same lines, bigger, faster, stronger, and it becomes weak link in the chain.
Yeah.
Again, the obliques, just like, lats and subscaps and everything we're seeing in that kinetic chain, the muscular chain for pitchers. I mean, it's and it's those front side obliques which are the worst. You know, when they're backside, not such a difficult thing to get over, but the front sides, same thing for the hitter. I mean, more power, bigger bat speeds, higher average exit velocities, and that's just again, it's all part of the same. But it, durability, sustainability, ultimately, is what we need to be striving for here.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hey, folks, if you're in need of an orthopedist, you got one of the best in the business, and right down the street. I've been there myself, and great new facility, which really isn't new anymore.
No.
But you've expanded to Frisco and Mansfield, so thank you enough for coming on. This has been fascinating. We could keep going, but
No kidding. It's great for you to stop down. I know you're seeing your mother there in New York and you're taking time to be with us. We really appreciate it. And look, if for you guys, if you'll go on the TMI website, they have these little, they're animated things about if you've got an injured kid, you can just kind of look at what the injury is. I mean, they got knees, elbows, everything. I was like, got stuck in it going, wow, this is interesting. It's really neat. It's educational. Even for dumb people like me, I was going, okay, now I see how this works and how that works in there. But Dr. Meister, I can't thank you enough for coming on with us. This has been fantastic.
I appreciate it. Thank you both.
Hey, what's the youngest TJ you've ever done?
Oh, years back, I did one on a 14, you know, somebody in the 14-year-old age group. He was very, very physically mature. And so he was probably, 16 plus years in terms of just physical maturation. But I won't go that young anymore. I'll put a brace in them. We've had very, very good luck just repairing them. And if, you know, we can save them the bigger procedure in that age bracket, then I think we're probably doing them a real service and a real favor. But look, I mean, it doesn't bode well when somebody's blowing out at that young an age. Is that they're going to physically be able to make it, you know, to an elite level, college level. I mean, those chances are pretty damn slim at that point. Parents,
I imagine.
Yeah, you just can't fix and heal everything and expect that everything's going to be okay again.
Yeah. Oh man. Well, yeah. I mean, my son's 11, and so we're at the baseball field every dang weekend, and I'm telling him fastballs and changeups. You know.
Yeah. Much competition though, just go out and play. I mean, go out and play catch in the backyard and pick up games with your friends. I mean, but everything now, unfortunately, is this intense, organized environment. And that's, that spikes, we say that spikes loads. That increases stress and load. Every time you're in that competitive environment.
Yeah. Yep. All right.
Well, Dr. Meister, you're done, Jeff? That's good?
I'm done. Yeah. For now,
I could go for another hour and a half and listen to him talk, but I know you got to get back to it. We're going to see you obviously around the field
for there sure.
when you're in town at the home games, especially. That's the ones I'm at all the time. But Dr. Meister, we can't thank you enough for coming on. Guys, we're going to go down in the bus leagues right after this.
Take care, guys. Thank you.
All right, a big thanks to Dr. Keith Meister for joining us. We know what a busy schedule he has, and that was great for him to join us right there. All right, guys, it is time to go down in the bus leagues. We're going to do this every week. We started this when we first started the show. We've always had it. We're going to go to each level of the system. They're all playing right now. Some of them aren't playing exactly great, but we'll at least highlight a couple players there. Going to start out in Frisco. That's the highest level, AAA Frisco Rough Riders. Sam Huff has really kind of been the talk.
He's been really good. Yeah. I mean, he was good from the start, even when Davis Wenzel and Justin Foskey were there. He's hits for power. He's not striking out as much. He's always going to strike out, but he's not doing it as much.
He's got three home runs.
Nobody in the organization hits the ball farther than Sam Huff. Nobody in big leagues, minor leagues, nobody hits it further than Sam Huff. He didn't catch as much last year as they wanted him to, and that's not his fault because he was on the shuttle between Round Rock and the majors, and when he was with the major league team, he really didn't catch a lot. So they wanted him to catch more. That's why they signed Andrew Kisner. Kisner's got one hit this season. He's not catching much. Jonah Heim's catching like four straight games. So,
I bet Jonah goes tonight too.
Yeah, I would assume that Huff is needed at some point this season. So keep an eye on Sam. I was really surprised that the Rangers went and signed Kisner, but Huff got the extra option here, and so that. That led to that. So Sam Huff, you know, and our buddy Dustin Harris is fine, and but they're dealing with a ton of injuries.
Yeah, Mark Church. Rock.
Mark Church is the latest one.
He might have got a call up if hadn't been.
Yeah. When Cole Wynn was called up on whatever day it was, Sunday, Bruce Bochy said, "Yeah, Church is kind of dealing with a couple of things." So we went with Wynn, and it turns out that it was a shoulder issue. So don't have real any word on how long he's going to be down. Daniel Robert also injured. He's not expected to be out very long, but they're just signing guys left and right, you know, kind of journeyman guys. They signed Sean Anderson, who was in the organization apparently in 2021. I do not remember it at all. And then they signed Colin Wiles, who was a second round pick in 2012, I think. Never made it to the majors with the Rangers. He's pitching the majors with the A's. So they're now at AAA, and they're just trying to kind of mix and match things. You know, Antoine Kelly's on the injured list also. So if the Rangers need a reliever, not sure what they'll do. They may, you know, Jonathan Hernandez is still on injury rehab assignment down there. He might be the guy, if they need an arm. He gave up a couple runs, Thursday night, but otherwise has pitched okay. But that might be kind of where they're at, or like we talked about earlier, they keep Leiter in the bullpen, try to ride out a couple days here in Atlanta until he's like his bullpen day, and maybe he's ready to go and help him out Sunday. So, interesting times in Round Rock.
Yeah, and they're just to do it. I normally do their record. They're 7-11 overall. They are 3-7 in their last 10. So, like we're talking about, scuttle a little bit. Probably the most talented team when the season started, but a lot of those guys are playing in Arlington, Texas. So that kind of changes things right there. We go to Frisco next, guys. That's AA. They are 7-5 overall, 6-4 in the last 10. So that means they've played, 12 games? All they played. I guess the big Acker, maybe. Acker's done good.
Yeah, Dane's been really good. And I
friend of the show.
Yeah, and I thought he had a good season last year. And when you look at the surface level stuff, like, you know, the stats, it was good. 2.54 ERA. Of course, he was dealing with a shoulder injury coming out of spring training, so he didn't pitch a lot. And then, but then you talk to some Rangers people, and they're like, "Well, his walks are up. His stuff wasn't as good. That's why they didn't protect him from the Rule 5 draft. He made it through. He's healthy now. And look, he's a guy. I mean, I really think that Dane Acker could reach the major leagues this year. I think he's going to be a quick bump to Round Rock, especially if he keeps pitching like this. It just seems like it's a foregone conclusion. So that's the guy in the rotation to keep an eye on. You know, our buddy is our buddy Ryan Garcia has pitched okay. You know, there are other guys there. Teodo had an okay outing.
I haven't seen much on Weems.
Weems is on the injured list. He has a jammed finger, but that should be only temporary. So anyway. Yeah, they're not doing a lot right now on the road. They've lost their first three road games in Arkansas. Not a lot of offense there. Aaron Zavala, the good news is he's walking a lot again. He's only hitting somewhere in the 220s, but his on-base percentage is .444. So it seems like he's kind of gotten back on track. He's always been a slow starter. Last year he never really got on track. So he's a guy to watch.
Well, in Frisco, this is reminiscent of when the Rangers were really good, going through that stretch where they were making the playoffs. Frisco wasn't the most talented team in the organization. Mm-hmm. And then the last couple of years, they've really been talented in the organization, but everyone's doing what they're supposed to do. They're promoting on. There is a group of young kids that are on their way to Frisco eventually. But, you know, we're about to talk about them now. A couple of them are injured and all of that. We're going to go down to Hickory. That's high A. There is high A and low A. Hickory Crawdads, they're 4-8 overall, 4-6. They're not hitting the ball, and Cam Colley is injured.
Yeah, I'm not sure what happened there. He's on the 7-day IL. But yeah, the offense is a major problem down there in
Walcott
and Hickory. Walcott's young. He's probably making some adjustments.
He's 18.
He's got Quincy Scott, who was the 9th round pick last year, big guy, really big. They're trying him at first base. He plays some left field. He homered last night. Yosi Gallant hit a couple home runs.
Morbell's done okay.
Morbell's doing well. So after he missed almost all of last season. So they're going to come around. They've started scoring some runs a little bit here. They scored 6 last night, for instance, but ended up losing 9-6. Winston Santos is pitching tonight. He has an 0.84 ERA, but he's 1-1. So that kind of explains the story there.
That tells me no run support.
Yeah, but you know, Brock Porter, Mitch Bratt are, you know, a bunch of guys we know, Aiden Curry, friends of the show. So they'll be fine. They'll get it figured out.
And Porter is, you know, he's pitched 5 innings, 5 Ks. He's got a 3.6 ERA. There are a couple of huge names that are on that roster. One of them, who is on the 60-day IL, is Kumar Rocker, who where they have him rostered right now. But obviously, he's not going to be back till after halfway through the season at least.
Yeah.
But that's a big name to watch. This is a guy that could be on a fast track once he's healthy again.
Yeah.
Being a college guy in his age.
I would think they'd just finish him out at Hickory.
No, nothing this year.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is this is a guy that comes back this year, and next year might be one of those fast track guys that you might could see by the end of the year. Helping out the rotation or the bullpen. Not this year. No. He'll just be getting back and getting – this is his first Tommy John surgery that he's ever had. He's going to go through that whole I can't get it over the plate thing when you first get back, but I'm throwing 99 miles an hour. Okay, let's go down to Down East. That's the low A team. Down East is 7-5, 5-5 in their last 10. Again, these double A and below have only played about 11 or 12 games. They're just now really
good. They started a week later.
Not a lot to talk about there. Tommy Specht.
Yeah. He's an interesting guy. I think he was the 5th round pick in 22 out of Iowa, as I recall. Left-handed bat. Nice kid. Looks good at the plate. So, that's where you're starting to see these guys, the high school kids who were drafted 2022, probably spent some complex time, maybe a little time in Down East, starting to get their groove, starting to get into a routine and starting to play. And Glider Figueroa, I can never pronounce his name. He has 3 home runs. He's hitting the ball pretty good. I wouldn't be surprised if he's a quick promotion. He's repeating here, and I could see that for sure happening. But we just got to wait and see, but, they're the only team with a winning record. So, hey, give them a little credit, I guess.
Well, Frisco's technically 7-5.
Oh, that's right. They're both 7-5. So, yeah.
But this is anyway. The babies. I call them the babies. These are the guys that are very young or the college draft picks from last year that, you know, there's not, you know, they start there. So, it's. You know, really, baby, is the ACL, the Arizona Complex League, which comes after the draft, doesn't it?
No, it'll be in – they start up in June. So
June, okay. And then you've got, of course, the DSL, which hasn't really started kicked in yet either with the Dominican Summer League. And each of those run 2 teams usually? Or
Just the Dominican
runs two teams. And
we'll
get stuff out of there when we can see it. It's kind of hard to get stuff out of there, but – you know, we've got the contacts to find out what's going on. Well, guys, that's another one. Anybody else we need to talk about?
No, just a couple things to remember. You know, sign up for Rangers Today. And like we talked about, if you are watching this and want an annual subscription to the website, I'll give it to you for $48. You got to email me at jeff@rangerstoday.com.
Or DM me.
It's like a podcast-only special. So, shoot me an email. And we'll get that straightened up.
Remember to say you listened to the episode.
A couple guys, a couple of you signed up last week, so that's good. We want as many as we can get, obviously, because that's more money in my pocket. But it turns out to be more trips and more fun things that we can do with the website and the podcast. So Do that while you're at it. If you haven't subscribed to our YouTube channel, which is free, go ahead and do that. The more we have, the more community we build. We're trying to respond to comments and everything. And you'll see some different stuff now over on the YouTube channel where we've kind of broken out some segments. So if you don't have time to watch the whole thing, you can maybe jump in and grab the guest or the bus league segment or the major league segment, whatever it is. There are a lot of options. We're fan friendly and viewer friendly. So we're trying, we're doing a good job, and we want to keep this train on the tracks.
All right, guys, that's it. Big thanks to Dr. Keith Meister for joining us. For Jeff Wilson, I'm John Moore. Until next time, we will see you at the yard.